Well, good morning, church. We thought we were done with winter, I think, for a little bit, but it seems to have come back this morning. There's at least a small chill in the air, and I'm thankful for the warm presence of my brothers and sisters in Christ for certain this morning. What a great deal we have to be thankful for. And as we're continuing our study this morning through Peter's epistle, the book of 1 Peter, there's a lot to consider. We've been talking for the last few weeks about culture wars, about what's going on, and it seems like the world's changing, and how do we combat that, and how do we fight against that. And this morning, it feels like we're going to have a little bit of a shift. So let's talk about it. I want you to picture a courtroom scene. Oops, got to turn on. Picture a courtroom scene. And the charge is simple. It's that Christianity is harmful, that Christians are dangerous, and that the gospel, the good news about Jesus Christ, is actually bad for society. And the prosecutor says, "In your honor, I'd like to present as evidence Exhibit A." Now, what's going to be the evidence for all these things? And it's not a bunch of sociological data. It's not an incriminating picture. It's not some chemical analysis from CSI. The exhibit is your marriage. That's it. Your marriage. Because if someone wants to decide whether the gospel is real, they're not going to start by reading some theology book. They're going to start by looking at you and me. And when two people are living together and they're going to disagree, right? And when stress hits, when money gets tight, when someone's exhausted, when forgiveness is required, that is the perfect combination. That is your home. That is my home. That is not even a special event. That is called a Tuesday. Right? This is just what married life is like. It's what it means to live in a family. It's just an average day. But here's the hard part for at least for you and me to admit that this courtroom, it's not imaginary. It's a little bit of hyperbole, but it's not imaginary. And it is happening all the time today where people are judging Christianity based on your marriage and my marriage. It happens in the funny spouse jabs that we say to our friends, and everyone kind of laughs, and they kind of learn about what you think about marriage. It happens when we vent online, or if you're a Christian, you make a prayer request that's really just a complaint about your... Don't be looking at my wife. It's a thinly veiled complaint about our husbands or our wives. It happens on the way home from church when our kids sit in the back seat and listen to the way we really talk to one another. It happens when your coworkers see how you talk about your spouse when they're not around. So most of the people in our culture are not Christian. We talked about that a few weeks ago. They're not Christian, and I'm going to be honest with you. They're probably never going to read a Bible. Probably not. They're never going to get to know Jesus in the pages of Scripture alone. But they will absolutely read the evidence of Jesus in your life and in my life. And so one of the loudest pieces of evidence is what happens in our homes, in our families. Now, remember where we are here. The book of 1 Peter, it's written to Christians who are no longer welcome in their own culture. A lot of Christians today kind of identify with that. People are treating them with suspicion, and they're watching every move, and they're looking for something to discredit the gospel. The gospel is new, it's unpredictable, it's weird. They've investigated it and investigated it. They cannot figure out what's going on because all of the things that that Romans normally did, or people in the Roman culture normally did, the Christians didn't do. And some of the things the Christians did do, people in their culture didn't do. So one of the charges in one of the investigations, after they really poured over the Christians, said, you know what's weird about them? They share their table. I mean, they invite all sorts of people to share their table, but they don't share their beds. They don't sleep with one another's spouses, which was normal and customary in their culture. So what is so weird about Christians that they will share their table, but they won't share their bed? So they were being looked at with suspicion because they were weird. They were different. They didn't worship the gods of Rome. They didn't worship the emperor. They didn't pay homage and treat those people like that. So they're looking for some reason to discredit the gospel of Jesus Christ. And Peter is telling these Christians, he says, if the world is going to put your faith on trial, don't let exhibit A be your hypocrisy. And it will be if you let it be. So don't let exhibit A be your hypocrisy. They, like us, were in the middle of a culture war, and we tend to think of, when we say culture war, this is what we really mean, I think. At least that's what I mean. When we talk about a culture war, what we really mean is what those crazy people over there are doing. You know what I'm talking about? Like, we got a culture war. Did you hear what the schools in Illinois are doing? We got a culture war. Did you hear what those crazy folks in California are doing? We got a culture war. Did you hear what that crazy politician from New Jersey said? I mean, that's what we're talking about, is that we've got this culture war where some crazy people somewhere are doing something. And that's what we think a culture war is. But the real war is not fought on cable news. The real war, this culture war that we're so worried about, that they're so scared about, the real war is fought under your roof and under my roof. Not what some crazy senator somewhere said, not what some TV program had on. This is all being fought right under your roof and my roof. So even as these Christians are being scrutinized by outsiders, Peter says we need to go on the inside now. We need to turn to what's going on in the home. And so in 1 Peter chapter 3, he says this: wives, in the same way, submit yourselves to your own husbands, so that if any of them do not believe the word, they may be won over without words by the behavior of their wives when they see the purity and reverence of your lives. So, first things first. It feels like we've made a pretty drastic jump here. If you were here last week and you remember your sermon, so there's probably three of y'all out there. If you remember what we talked about last week, it was about honoring the emperor, right? We talked about what it meant to honor people who were in power over us, even when those people were not Christians. And that's a hard pill to swallow. But that's what he was talking about. And then he goes on, he talks about slaves and masters. He goes, slaves, you know, honor your masters, even when they're absolutely terrible people. You honor them. And now here we are at husbands and wives. So it feels like a big leap, but Peter says it's not. So you notice, and I'm just going to go back here a little bit, the very first, this phrase right up here, in the same way. If you've got a different version of the Bible, it may say likewise, something along those lines. But in the same way means he's connecting it back to what he was just talking about. Namely, he was talking about how Christians were supposed to live holy lives among unbelievers. That's what the topic is. How do you live a holy life around unbelievers, with unbelievers? So marriage is not a detour from that. It's just another application. This is just another place where believers can live holy lives when they are being led by or being overshadowed by unbelievers. So what we have to understand is in the Roman world, in their world, the household was considered a public institution. And so they placed a great deal of emphasis on this being the basic building block of society. That was their culture, is the home is responsible for this society. our culture, our society. So if a wife comes home with a new religion, that's a big deal. Because what if this wife coming home with a new religion destabilizes the home? What if it shames her husband or dishonors her husband? What if it causes this whole pyramid of blocks that we've assembled? What if it causes all of that to topple over? So they were very concerned that Christianity was going to destabilize society. So if a wife has this new religion, that might make Rome vulnerable or weak. It wasn't a big leap in their minds to go from what some woman somewhere, some wife somewhere was doing to being a threat to their society. So Peter is really careful here when he talks about this. And he calls for a posture of non-confrontation, but still being unmistakably Christian. How do you like stand strong in your faith without being a jerk? Are we getting closer to home now? And if you've noticed, Peter has been talking repeatedly to people who are not in power. He calls them, you know, foreigners, exiles, aliens, slaves, and now wives. These are basically just people who are not in power. Not because these people are worth less, but because they are worth so much and they're in a very difficult position. Can you imagine if your every move, your every word was scrutinized? As a wife or a mother, everything was under the magnifying glass, and they were judging Jesus by what you say and by what you do. And it's not just happening by the people out there. They're not the only ones looking for a flaw in your game. Your very husband is looking for a flaw in your game. That would be suffocating. It would be so hard to do. And so that's why Peter is very encouraging. This sounds, to our modern cultural ears, it sounds like Peter's trying to put women in a box. Peter's trying to protect women in the gospel that lives inside of them. So Peter gives them two things. He gives them a path and a goal. And he says the path, your path forward, if you are not married to a Christian, you have to understand what you have to do. Your path forward is steady and unrelenting faithfulness. That's your path. You can't get shaky. You can't blow up. You can't give up. Steady and unrelenting faithfulness. Not big flashy displays. Not brilliant arguments that your preacher made in the sermon on Sunday, which we all know they do. The goal here, there's the path. The goal here is to win them over with your very conduct. Like the way you live, the way you act, being such an influence that you don't have to make the argument. That's the goal. That your conduct is what makes the gospel believable. Maybe you have friends or family members or coworkers who are not believable. I know this because sometimes you come to me with questions. And you're like, I've got a coworker that says this. What do I say to that? And I have a family member who thinks this. What do I say to that? And you want like the right argument. And there are some great arguments, and I love, like, working through those. I'd be happy to share that with you anytime. But I'm going to tell you the real difference is not how great your argument is. It's how great you are. Like, if you make the perfect argument, but you're a jerk, it doesn't matter what you tell them. You can win the argument and lose that person in a heartbeat. So what people are, the real evidence here is not the efficiency of your words or the rightness of your words. It is the glorifying of your life, like how you are glorifying God by your life. Your conduct makes the gospel believable. And to be clear, because some people I think have misused and abused this passage, this is not permission for coercion or control or abuse. Do not fear. It's not to say, saying, stay unsafe, okay? Especially ladies. It means entrust yourself to God and let God's people help you pursue what is good. This is not a recipe for being stuck in abusive relationships. So don't let anybody try to pin you down in that. Because you and your conduct absolutely matter to God and His kingdom. So Peter continues on here. He says, your beauty should not come from outward adornment, such as elaborate hairstyles and the wearing of gold jewelry or fine clothes. Rather, it should be that of your inner self, the unfading beauty of a gentle and quiet spirit, which is of great worth in God's sight. Now, in status-driven cultures, like Roman culture and just like our culture, we have that in common. It's a status-driven culture. And in status-driven cultures, appearances matter a lot. They matter a whole lot. Think of it sort of like social armor. If things look good, nobody scrutinizes too closely. If things look good, nobody asks too many questions. Nobody suspects you of coming up short. So just make it look good. That's all that matters, right? And Peter doesn't say that it's bad to have armor. What he does emphasize is that you and me, as Christians, we've got a very different set of armor. Our armor is not making everybody and everything look perfect and polished. Our armor is character. And that character, unlike social armor, which is very temporal, so it's look good and look right and all that, man, all that changes so fast. Have you noticed that? And people complain about it all the time. They're like, well, should we eat eggs or should we not eat eggs? You know, just eat the whites. In other words, just eat the part without flavor. And then now they're saying, well, maybe it's got too much cholesterol in the yellow. Well, that's good cholesterol. That ain't so bad. So you know how the things change like that. So you can be feeling like, oh, well, I need to drive this kind of car, or live in this kind of house, or have this kind of relationship, or this kind of job, and you're doing all that, and then all of a sudden, bam, things change, and you're out of style, and you're out of fashion, you're not dressed right, you're not acting right, you're not working the right type of job, driving the right kind of car, and you're going, I got to change that again. And then in 10 years, bam, that changes again. So some people are perpetually chasing having the right phone and having the right hairstyle and making sure they fit in with the cultural expectations. There's that kind of looking right. And Peter says, don't chase that. You want something that's going to get stronger over time, not something that fades with time. So for ladies, a lot of times their social armor is their appearance. There's so many beautiful ladies here, and I am so thankful for them. And I'm not trying to talk about the way any of you are dressing or the way you've done your hair or your jewelry or any of that. This is not like me casting the disparaging judgment on the ladies of Forest Mill. This is Peter saying, and y'all know this probably better than anybody, that all that changes real quick, don't it? That the clothes you're wearing that look beautiful today in 5 or 6 years might look kind of silly. And the beauty that you have when you're younger that is just catches everybody's attention, in a few years that starts to fade and change. And Peter's saying, if you're relying on things that are fading or changing, you've got a weak armor. You need a strong armor. You need the armor that comes from the inside and goes out, and that is your character. Win by holiness that cannot be fake. It's the kind of holiness that your spouse sees on the worst day of the week. In January of 1956, there were 5 American missionaries that were killed in Ecuador. They were trying to make peaceful contact with an as yet uncontacted tribe. One of the men, quite famously, was a man named Jim Elliot. They made a movie about him that did pretty well. It was called The Tip of the Spear. You may have heard of it or maybe even seen it. So here's what you may not know. This is his wife. This is Elizabeth Elliot. And she, when Jim was killed, she was left a widow with a 10-month-old child. And a few years later, Elizabeth, with her child, moved back into the jungle. Not to seek revenge, not to confront them about the injustice. She moved back to live with the tribe that killed her husband. And so she learned their language, She built relationships. She raised her daughter there. And over time, many of that tribe, including some of the men who killed her husband, came to Christian faith because of Elizabeth's testimony. Elizabeth did not lead a public campaign. She didn't make fiery speeches. She didn't try to win by force. She embodied steady, fearless, discipled faithfulness. And when people asked her how she could go back, they were like, what I would ask, if Elizabeth was my friend and she said, I want to take my baby and go back to that same tribe, I'd be like, are you crazy? How can you take your baby back there? And she said she could not let her fear overpower the power of the gospel. She cannot limit the gospel by her fear. That Christ mattered more than her own worries and concerns. So she put on an armor that counted her character. And guys, unless you're thinking, wow, I'm so glad the women have to do all this. He turns and he directly speaks to husbands as well. And this is a pretty serious word. This is what he says. Husbands, in the same way, be considerate as you live with your wives. And treat them with respect as the weaker partner and as heirs with you in the gracious gift of life, so that nothing will hinder your prayers. And again, I'll look right up here. You see this in the same way? Or likewise, depending on your translations, that means this is not a different topic. Peter is not hopping topics. He is talking about how do you live a life of faith that honors Christ in all these circumstances. Husbands, that means we are called to Christ-shaped living just like our wives. Just like our wives, we are being called to Christ-shaped living. We're being called to live with understanding, with empathy, with attentiveness, with knowledge, with understanding, however you want to phrase it. We cannot be checked out at home. And Peter warns us that if we're treating our wives with this respect, or if we're not treating our wives with this respect, it will directly affect our prayers. You cannot be like a saint, like a private saint, and a tyrant in your own home. Those two things are incompatible. If you are not treating your wife and your kids as being important, if you're not paying attention to them, if you're not giving them the respect that they are due, you cannot be a holy man of God. God's not going to listen to your prayers. It's that important. Now, in the Roman world, men carried greater legal and social power. And then there's just the natural physical disparity between men and women. Where, you know, most of the time, guys, we're stronger than most of the women. Not all the time, because I've watched that Olympic powerlifting, and those girls are buff. But most of the time, most of the men are stronger than most of the women. That's generally a rule of thumb. So Peter's instructions here are pretty radical. He's like, you've got the power. You've got the political power. You've got the social power. You've got the economic power. You've got the physical power. And I'm calling for you to set aside that power in the name of divine accountability. You should not use the privilege of all that power to promote yourself. You should be using the privilege of all that power to respect and promote your spouse. That's what he's saying. So guys, if your leadership at home makes your wife feel smaller or unheard or unvalued or unsafe, it is not the leadership that Peter's talking about here. The idea is really simple, that we should have marriages that make the gospel believable. Because in the gospel, Jesus got on his knees and served people. That's what he did. And if I'm not doing that as a husband, I'm not doing that as a father, I'm not doing that as a preacher or a school bus driver or a member of our community, if I'm not doing that, the gospel's not believable because I'm not following Jesus. I've made up another Jesus along the way. So one of the best known historical examples of this is a lady, and you've probably never heard her. Her name was Monica. This is not an episode of Friends. Our Catholic brethren would call her Saint Monica. She was the mother of Saint Augustine, which you may have heard of. It's amazing grace. And multitudes, I mean, a long time ago, that's what it was named for, also the city of St. Augustine, was named after this guy, and he was very, a very famous Christian. It was his mother. And all these early Christian traditions talk about Monica, and she was married to a guy, a pagan, her husband was. His name was Patricius. Patricius. And Patricius reportedly had a terrible temper, and he was, mixed audience, serially unfaithful. So Monica is remembered not because she out-argued him, but by this steady, patient pattern of faith and of restraint and of goodness, even though her husband was a foul-tempered philanderer. And so accounts record that about a year before he died, Patricius became a Christian. It took that long, and it was not an easy path. But this is not like a fairy tale. This isn't a made-up story. It is a picture of what Peter's aiming for. Not control, not fear, not image management, which is what we sometimes think of this, image management. This is a quiet, courageous holiness that keeps doing good. And ladies, when he talks about having a gentle and quiet spirit, again, I don't want there to be a mistake. This is not a personality that he's describing. Some of the most amazing people I know are strong women, forceful women who have real ideas about the way the world ought to be, and they go about doing that. So this is not talking about just sitting back and ignoring. He's not saying don't talk. He's saying trust God in the process and don't think you're going to win by making a better argument. So brothers and sisters, I know, coming back to our idea, the big idea of the culture wars, I know that other people out there are saying and doing stuff that they have some terrible ideas. Let's just leave it at that. You can read it in the newspapers if there are still such things as newspapers. You can see it on cable news. Or you can hear about it online or on social media. I know that some people out there who don't know Jesus have really bad ideas about how the world ought to be. And sometimes they're even enacting, though. And they say some ungodly things, and they do some ungodly things, harmful things. I'm not disputing that in the least. But the way that we combat what ungodly people are doing is not by making a really great argument against ungodly people. The way that we combat ungodly people doing things is by being godly. If you want to make a difference, don't worry about what they are doing over there. Worry about how you treat your husband and wife. If you want to make a difference in what they are doing over there, raise your kids knowing that their mother and father love one another and treat one another with respect. Raise your family in a way that shows honor and shows respect and shows decency. Raise your kids in a way that sees how you talk about leaders, whether it's leaders in your home or leaders in your school or leaders in the community or the state or the nation. You want to make a difference. That's the difference maker, is that you lay a holy example. It's being the sort of husbands and wives and friends and neighbors that go around quietly making our little corner of the world a better place. And that sounds like it's not enough. Because I feel like we need to get somebody on cable news to talk about this. So it feels like it's not enough for you just to do your job as a husband or a wife or a member of this community. But Peter says, are you kidding me? Who was the guy who was on cable news last week? I have no idea. Right, because that thing comes and goes. Who was the amazing family who lived up the block from you who raised their kids so well? I'll never forget those people. So you want to make a difference, and I want to make a difference. That's who we be. That's really bad English. That's who we should be. All right. So love you guys. And my prayer for us this week is that we may be in our family relationships, husbands, wives, mothers, fathers, sons and daughters, friends and neighbors, that we may be in our relationships what God called us to be, so that we might stand firm and faithful in the face of evil. And if there's anything we can do to pray for you, lift you up, won't you come now as we stand and as we sing?